As the primary brand of Smithfield Culinary, we take pride in offering a huge array of high-quality pork products. There's really something for everyone, helping you satisfy every crowd, every time. Visit us at smithfieldculinary.com/smithfield.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Extra Serving, a podcast of the nation's restaurant news. I'm Sam Okus, editor-in-chief at NRN, joined by my very tired colleague, executive editor, Alicia Kelso. Alicia, do you need a nap? Would you rather do that than record
always
a podcast?
Always. Oh, no, I'd rather see you, of course.
Of course. Well, you're tired because you were on the road. You were in Atlanta for about, what, 12 hours yesterday?
I don't even think it was 12 hours. I think it was 10.
Okay, tell me about it. What
were you doing? So I had the opportunity to go visit Zaxby's headquarters, which are now in Atlanta. They moved their headquarters about a year ago from Athens, Georgia, just outside of where they were founded about 35 years ago, and to check out their new space and talk to a bunch of their executives. And it was a really cool opportunity. And of course, eat some food. And it was a really cool opportunity. And I came away from the experience learning a lot about the brand, their strategic direction, much more to come. I've got a lot to unpack. I think I talked to about five or six executives. So just really cool stuff going on over there. And, you know, I will caveat this with the fact that they moved their headquarters to Atlanta basically because they're growing and have much bigger growth aspirations. And so we, you know, the talent, the resource availability, airport, all of that stuff that Atlanta provides that Athens just didn't. So I think much more to come from this brand, and I will start telling the story hopefully in a week or so.
Yeah, you know, Zaxby's, we don't have here in Columbus, but when I was in North Carolina, they're all over the place, obviously, because they're based in the South. And big fan of that brand, and I'll tell you why. I've got a lot of love for all of the chicken chains because, like every other American, I'm a big fan of fried chicken. And, of course, you know how I feel about Chick-fil-A. I had it for dinner last night, in fact. Raising Cane's, support. I support. I like them as a company. Listen, and this is no diss. This is just personal preference. I tend to just prefer Chick-fil-A over Raising Cane's. It's just where I am in life, right? But Zaxby's, what I like about Zaxby's is they lean more Chick-fil-A than Raising Cane's in that they have more than chicken fingers. They have salads, sandwiches, and that's what I like. And we actually just had Huey Magoo's open up here near us, and we've been going there a lot lately, A, because the chicken's phenomenal, but B, because, again, it's a range of options. Mm-hmm. And last night when we had Chick-fil-A as a family, Katie and I both got salads because it was like, I like the ability to have a salad. I don't want to be confined to chicken fingers. So again, Zaxby's, great expansive menu. And I mean, I think they are so well positioned in this marketplace. I mean, we've been talking about chicken a lot for the last couple of weeks, especially because of Taco Bell, McDonald's, Wendy's, everybody's like chicken, 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 chicken. Mm. Well, it helps when you have almost 1,000 locations, I think, Zaxby's.
They will have 1,000, I believe he said, in Q3. And I talked to CEO Bernard Acoca. He joined the brand in 2022, has intentionally been sort of quiet, heads down, working to formalize their strategic plan. And he's got a lot. He's ready to talk now. They're ready to execute really impressive stuff. One thing I will kind of say about this brand, you know, the category, as you mentioned, Sam, has really intensified, particularly in the past year, and not just with chicken players like Raising Cane's, but like you said, we've got traditional legacy burger joints really wanting to get a piece of this chicken market share. So Zaxby's has a plan to differentiate. That, you know, they rely heavily on their sauces. As you mentioned, their menu is way more robust than many of their competitors, you know, sort of for that veto vote opportunity. But what I really love about this brand is their unit economics are very, very sound. In the past 10 years, their average unit volumes have increased from about 1.8 million to about 2.7 million. They see a path to 3 million this year. Many competitors, including in the chicken space, can't say the same. There's a lot of stagnancy in terms of average unit volumes. And so that gives them a license to grow. And I think they're ready to do just that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very squarely in the fast casual category as far as quality and experience. And yet they have drive-throughs. They, you know, I think are probably more competitively priced, more toward a QSR pricing than a lot of fast casuals. So it's a good place to be. I would certainly not bet against Zaxby's, especially because there's one fact about founder Zach McElroy that makes him particularly impressive.
He's a drummer. He's a
He's a
drummer.
drummer. And he
Just like you and
sold
I.
just like the two of us. Audience, if you don't know this about Alicia and I, both of us are drummers. This was a fun coincidence that we fell into when we became colleagues. But Zach McElroy sold his first drum set to finance the first, or sold his drum set to finance the first Zaxby's, which is a great story. And I feel for him. I will not sell my drum kit.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the Papa John story when he sold his Camaro, and you know, there's just that founder mentality that you just love the grit. You know, one thing that if I can end on that always surprises me about Zaxby's, we have this Technomic data at our fingertips. It's a top 40 brand. It's bigger than Five Guys and Hardee's and Carl's Jr. It's kind of a sleeper brand in that way. And I think based on, again, my conversations at their headquarters, I think that's probably going to change. Like I said, they're ready to talk about that. And it's not just unit growth. I mean, they've got some marketing and menu excitement coming down the pike. And I don't think that them being a top 40 brand will surprise many people anymore.
Yeah, if I could compare them to a fellow chicken competitor, Bojangles. It's like Bojangles primarily in the Southeast, and people would be surprised to know it's a $1 billion brand because it absolutely slays in one part of the country and is non-existent in another part of the country. And you know, Bojangles, again, to kind of run with the comparison, has struggled to figure out how to get out of the Southeast because it's got a real, hey, we hit that on the way to the beach in the summertime kind of mentality, or for a lot of like us in the Midwest. But like, you know, to become not just a Southern brand, but to become an American national brand, if Zaxby's and other brands like Bojangles can figure it out, I mean, the product is there, you know, the operations there, I think it could be much, much bigger. And obviously the time is ripe for the chicken category. Okay. We have a couple of news stories we want to touch on as it relates to major restaurant companies. So we're talking like top 20 companies, not top 40. But the first one we want to touch on is very technology related. We talked about them in technology a few weeks ago, but this is another massive step forward for Yum Brands. They announced a partnership with NVIDIA to incorporate NVIDIA's AI into everything that Byte by Yum is trying to accomplish in terms of making the AI very efficiently used within the Yum Brands operations. NVIDIA, of course, this massive global AI company that is, I think, is it safe to say that it is the main competitor to ChatGPT or OpenAI? I think it's.
Last summer, it became the world's largest in terms of market cap. It passed Apple. And I will say that at the AI boom, it's a chip maker, right? So the AI boom helped grow its market value by 850% since 2022. It's huge.
It's wild. And the, you know, headline here is just the advancements in AI in restaurants, because when you see the world's biggest restaurant company team up with the world's biggest chip maker and AI facilitator, well, guys, that's a story. There's something big going on there. Alicia, tell us what the implications of this are.
I think it would be safe to say, based on what you just said, that this is an inflection point. You know, Yum, we've been talking about AI sort of at the simmering level for several years now, and there's been a lot of pilots, a lot of tests at especially the bigger players, you know, but a lot of the mid-majors are getting earnestly involved now. Zaxby's mentioned AI several times, for example, during my visit yesterday. This, though, I think, again, it pushes that conversation into a whole new stratosphere when you have the world's largest restaurant brand partnering with NVIDIA explicitly to accelerate the rollout on the heels of that Byte by Yum division launch to streamline all of its tech solutions and, again, enable faster adoption of these digital tools. You know, I think that we are going to, you know, the whole market is going to eventually follow sooner than later. And, you know, this is came on the heels of several tech announcements from Yum, including that Byte launch in which Joe Park, who is Yum's chief digital and tech officer, is overseeing. You know, and I was at Taco Bell's Live Mas Live event earlier this month in New York City, and they said that Taco Bell has invested over $1 billion in these types of tech. And it's been worth it to have, you know, that investment in these capabilities, because it's driven the digital sales mix at Taco Bell to over 50%. Yum execs have, you know, have mentioned several times before they really like digital consumers. They spend more, they visit more. Yum is able to get more of their data, and it becomes this virtual cycle. That is that's explicitly what the point is here. They want to accelerate this, you know, to have that virtuous cycle going at most of their restaurants sooner than later. You know, with NVIDIA, I think it's worth mentioning, out of the gate, this partnership is going to focus on three key areas for Yum's restaurants. And that includes voice AI ordering, which is already in test at Taco Bell. It's going to expand to its other brands at KFC, Pizza Hut, and Habit Burger and Grill. Computer vision, you know, which should ideally expedite operational flow and all that on the operations side, and then analytics to enhance restaurant performance. They're targeting 500 restaurants during the second quarter with this. And, you know, again, the goal is to provide these franchisees with what they call better and faster and cheaper technology. And there's also a consumer aspect here, and of course, maximizing shareholder returns. So,
yeah. Well, you know, Alicia, the cynic in me says it's only a matter of time before the Terminator situation happens and we're all moving underground because the robots have taken over. But let's take that hat off and just put on the restaurant operations hat and say, I mean, this, I cannot really overstate how important this is for the future of the industry. I mean, especially if you look at something like the QSR space and AI, voice activated AI in the drive-through. The drive-through for most QSR brands is 70% of their sales. 70% of McDonald's, call it $50 billion annual sales, is, I'm not good at math, this is why I do words for a living, what, 30, high 30 billions of dollars going through a drive-through window in a McDonald's in the US. And if you can replace that, you know, experience with AI to, listen, not replace the employee. Let's not jump to get rid of all those workers in QSR, because there's a role for them. And I'll share a little bit more about that in a second. But if you just at least make it an easier job for that person in the window to handle, for example, as you've written about, Alicia, all of the new menu items coming out at Taco Bell, You make that job a lot more appealing to people to come in and do, because it's a lot easier for them to handle. And B, you're just able to facilitate a better throughput, it will improve your sales. So the implications just in the drive-through window are huge. But I mean, as you're pointing out, all of the rest of the digital ordering experience, which is so vital, and which a lot of these companies are still chasing a 100% digital order experience, this is going to be the bridge, I think, to get them from whatever they're at, 60, 70% digital order now, to a 100%. Now, I, this week, went through a Taco Bell drive-thru. More to come is what I'm going to say. If you go follow me on TikTok, yes, Alicia, at my TikTok, at Takeaway Sam, I have something special coming on my experience in the Taco Bell drive-thru, and I'll explain it maybe on next week's episode when this thing is official. But there was a very kind gentleman helping me through my experience, because I wanted to try the new stuff. So I get to the window, the digital menu board, I'm not trying to throw shade at Taco Bell, the digital menu board was flashing on and off. It was having some issues. And so I was asking him, what are the new items they have on hand? And he was very ably sharing with me what's there. I asked about nacho fries. He said, no, but those are coming on the 26th, next week. It was a good experience. I got a dirty soda so that I could share it with the world, or 20 of my 20 followers on TikTok. And, you know, he handed it to me and he said, don't shake it up, because it will fizz like a washing machine. But you don't get that from AI, guys. You don't get, yeah. You know, like, there is still the human experience here that, again, is so key to making a great restaurant experience. But it's all going to be, it's going to be that complementary thing that we have to shoot for, which is working with AI and humans together.
It is. And to your point, there is a lot of work and refinement that is still needed very much on the AI side. All of TikTok is rife with AI drive-through ordering experiences, and not in a positive way. They mess up. They don't understand consumers. It's frustrating. And I think when you go to a restaurant and you expect a human interaction, it can be a little bit maybe off-putting. But it's getting better, and it's getting better faster, thanks in large part to companies like NVIDIA. But it's there's a call center component here too. So one of the things that Yum will leverage NVIDIA for, already is in some circumstances, is that call center. I got to tell you, I've had really terrible experiences with AI call centers as it applies to ordering pizza in the past several months, to the point where I've abandoned my orders and gone elsewhere. I'm not going to throw any brands under the bus, but it is not, part of me is like, gosh, is it just my age? It's not. It's a terrible experience, and it needs a significant amount of refinement for this to be, a more, stronger conversation in terms of taking over the restaurant space. I will say, I did talk to Dane Matthews, Taco Bell's chief digital and tech officer, about the Taco Bell restaurants that are already testing this AI at the drive-thru. And one thing he said that really kind of did intrigue me is that they have higher retention rates, because you're removing that sort of menial task of 400 plus greetings a day and allowing them to focus on that really kind of richer, deeper conversation at the actual window. So pros and cons right now. And we'll see. Obviously, this is a story. It's not going away, and it's something we will follow.
By the way, we're not going to dig too much into this because we have more on Denny's coming. I'm just going to say that more on Denny's to come soon. But we're talking about NVIDIA this week. Denny's came out with the NVIDIA Bites, NVIDIA Breakfast Bites, a limited time offer that is, as far as I can tell, four sausage links with silver dollar pancakes that you're supposed to, I think, wrap up. There's a whole thing. I'm looking at the website here. It's how to make a perfect bite. You're supposed to stack the sausage and the pancake, wrap it up, dip it in syrup. Anyway, the point here is that NVIDIA's founder, Jensen Huang, started as a dishwasher at Denny's, which is, that's a great story. That is just very cool.
Yes.
You share that story of somebody who's gone on to become the CEO of the biggest company in the world now by market cap.
It goes back and forth, but yes.
Yeah. It's just phenomenal. And again, I don't know the story, how long he was at Denny's and what Denny's taught him, but I'm sure it's a good deal.
He was a dishwasher and a server. One thing that intrigued me really quick is he actually said in his statement that it inspired the birth of NVIDIA at a Denny's booth. So that goes to the third place conversation of the applicability of restaurants as a, community hub and all that other stuff we've been talking about. Yep.
Restaurants are not just a access point for food. They are an experience. Okay, before we jump into that other big top 20 company headline story, I want to talk about consumer sentiment. Alicia, you just wrote a great piece about consumer sentiment and how it continues to perilously fall off.
I'm
going to
call it a great piece.
Not a great piece. A well-written piece on some news we all must know. But unfortunately, the news is not good. Where is consumer sentiment right now?
You know, I hate writing about this negative stuff, too. I don't like being negative Nancy. But there are a lot of signals on the consumer sentiment side that have really kind of abruptly started flashing a deep red in recent weeks. Namely, the University of Michigan, which tracks consumer sentiment every month, it fell to the lowest point in March since November of 2022. And it fell, 8% month over month. The Conference Board consumer confidence, meanwhile, fell 7 points in February, which was its largest decline since August 21. The story that I wrote hinged on Big Chalk data, which showed that over 33% of U.S. households are now actively reining in their discretionary spending. And that is a 5-point drop just since June. So on top of all this consumer sentiment measurement, we have, you know, credit card balances are at an all-time high. Credit card delinquencies are rising. Every major airline issued downward guidance is the number of Americans planning a vacation in the next 6 months is at the lowest level in 15 years. And percentages of borrowers at least 60 days late on their car payments is now at the highest on record. Add to that early data from labor groups that suggest 2025 is going to be sort of a lull for pay raises. So 22 through 24, you know, those wage rates kind of helped consumer spending stay paced with the high inflation. And that is probably going to slow this year. All of this obviously is a concern for the restaurant industry, which relies heavily on discretionary visits. And, you know, it's worrisome. And I think that we're starting to see some of the cracks that are showing from that. There's several reasons that are feeding this. You know, tariff news has been dizzying. The news has been rife with layoffs, both in the private and now the public sector. Egg prices are 60% higher than they were, you know, beef prices are jumping and so on and so forth. You know, I think that the first half of this year is going to be a tighter ride than anyone predicted. And hopefully it eases in the second half of this year, but it's hard to tell right now.
Yeah, it's to your point. It's frightening because the restaurant industry is right in the crosshairs of whatever comes next, because historically, restaurants are the first thing to go. The first thing as discretionary income starts to, as people start tightening the belt a little bit, restaurants are one of the first things to go. So, you know, it's sort of a TBD on what happens with the economy. And this thing is just an absolute roller coaster. The tariffs being a great example of will they, won't they? Who knows what happens with inflation? I mean, by and large, signs are largely negative right now. I don't care if you're on the right or the left. Things feel bad. But, you know, even if we miraculously can pull up out of this, not get into a recession, economy improves, inflation goes down, it's all of those things you were just talking about, Alicia, just the fact that people are, you know, defaulting on loans and car payments. And we have this issue where something's got to give. And unfortunately, often when something has to give, that thing that gives first is restaurant spending. So yeah. Not super optimistic about Q. I mean, we talked about Q1 that was going to be really brutal for restaurants because of weather and sicknesses and all sorts of other factors, fires. Q2 might just be a good old fashioned economy bad kind of quarter for restaurants.
Yeah, there's again the flashing stuff is it's kind of freaking me out a little bit. Did you see the news where DoorDash and Klarna partnered up, where consumers can now choose to pay for food delivery in interest rate installments? I mean, you know, we're just kind of in a consumer debt. I cannot imagine how we got here, where we have to installment free for payments for like a Chipotle delivery or something like that.
Yeah. And that's let's also take a second to talk about cost of things. I mean, like the sad thing is how much some of this stuff, especially if you think about DoorDash with fees, it's become untenable. Again, something's got to give. So it's a bad spot to be in. I think it points to, like in 2024, it points to the need for value, the need to demonstrate value, to communicate. And this doesn't have to be a value meal. It doesn't have to be discounting. It can be in value messaging. It can be in demonstrating, hey, if you're going to start cutting your restaurant budget by half, don't let us be a part of that half because we're the value, you know, we're the value experience. And it could be experience oriented, right? Like, hit those messaging channels, social media, whatever it is, communicate to your customer, your loyal customer. We can still be a part of your life affordably because of either price point or because of that memorable experience we're giving you, whatever that is. But we'll see more marketing initiatives around this. We'll see a lot more, you know, brands throwing stuff at the wall, frankly, to make sure that the guest doesn't abandon them in this time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, okay.
Well, to that point, I think that we'll see a significantly higher focus on loyalty programs too.
Yes.
Right now, the frequent loyal customers are worth their weight in gold, as Rick Miller from Chalk Data told me. You know, wait, how do you play in this this deeply concerning environment where you kind of have to consider some promotional and value, you know, obligations without compromising further your margins. You know, it's a balance that I don't, again, envy anyone who has to deal with, you know, margin measurement or pricing or anything like that, because pricing is still very much a huge conversation right now. When we talk about consumer sentiment, yeah, we talked about eggs, but the grocery store is still very much more favorably, you know, positioned on the inflationary index than restaurants. And that's not good for restaurants. And they were, you know, month over month, grocery prices were flat and restaurants ticked up again. So that's why we started losing traffic in 24. And yep. So that's an issue.
By the way, too, I should also circle back around to something we were talking about earlier. I mean, I think that's why you're seeing so much action in beverage right now. Beverage is such a good high margin item for restaurants in so many different ways, no matter the beverage. And I think for the consumer who is looking for a pick me up, an indulgence, something that's a little bit new and different, but not breaking the bank, beverage seems to be really fitting that mold right now. I think that's probably why we're seeing this so much from Taco Bell, from McDonald's, from Wendy's, from all these others. And so I'm sure we will continue to see innovation around value oriented items like beverages. Perhaps we see some more activity in snacks. Okay, it's time to move on. Let's maybe try to get a little bit more optimistic.
Please.
We'll see how we do with that. We're going to move on to the extra serving portion of our episode, which is, of course, that portion of the show where I drag this part of it out as long as I possibly can because of waiting for the extra serving guest to show up. And there she is. It's managing editor Leanne Zinsmeister on for today's extra serving. Leanne, welcome.
Thank you. Cool hat, Leanne, Aisha.
Thank you. It's my new Zaxby's hat.
I thought it was new.
I'm looking around to see if I have any hats around.
Where's your hat, Sam?
Sam feels left out.
Hang on. Oh, man, you know what? There was a very special hat that I could have brought to this. I'll save it for next week's episode because it's an industry-provided hat that Mabel gave a little special addition to. So I'll save that for next week because it'll be a fun show and tell. Leanne, we just got done talking about consumer sentiment. So Alicia and I are a little depressed at the moment and how bad things are. Are we going to pick things up by talking about Darden? Is there reason to be optimistic when we talk about Darden, which just reported its quarterly earnings?
Actually, I think there is. And I can't tell from your queue up if you expected me to say that or if you expected me to say, no, I'm going to make you sad again.
I'm genuinely not sure what you're going to say. I'm excited to hear. Yeah.
That's what happens when you have me on a podcast. Anything could happen. I do think there's reason to be optimistic, which is a little bit surprising because I obviously don't need to rehash all that consumer sentiment stuff. But casual dining in particular has been struggling and tends to be the first to struggle when the economy starts to suffer. But in this case, Olive Garden sales are up just slightly, like less than 1%, I believe. But executives said that the numbers are trending upward for the first 3 weeks of March, which, of course, is not included in what they reported. Their quarter ended mid-February, but they're optimistic about the quarter that we're currently in, the next one to be reported. They have been bringing back some of their marketing tricks that they had been using pre-5 years ago. They had previously brought back Olive Garden's Never Ending Pasta Bowl. That has done really well for them in this kind of environment. They've just announced they're bringing back the, what did they call it? Eat one, take one, buy one, take one. Deal at Olive Garden, and they're making adjustments to all of these. You know, the Never Ending Pasta Bowl, the deal looks different than it did 6 years ago, and so does this one. But it's consumers recognize it, and they're excited to get back to Olive Garden. So I actually think that Darden is giving us reasons to be optimistic. They're taking some things they've been doing at Olive Garden and folding them into some of their other brands. Olive Garden recently finally fully launched their Uber Direct program. So delivery, and they're testing it at Cheddar's now. They're starting to work their POS system into Chewy's, which is their most recent acquisition. So they seem to be on top of things. And yes, I feel good about Darden in particular, which makes me feel good about casual dining.
Ugh, phew. It makes me feel good about life a little bit more, Leanne.
I'm glad.
I was thinking so deep until you joined us to say that. Now, it's funny because Wall Street didn't feel the same way. Alicia, can you explain this to me? I never understand where Wall Street's like, no, not good enough.
Let's be fair here. They ended yesterday up almost 9%. So Wall Street balked in the beginning, but they were like, never mind, because Wall Street is, you know. Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah.
They missed expectations. That's what happened. And, you know, I think Darden here has sort of the advantage and the disadvantage, depending on which way you look at it, of reporting far after everyone else reported or before everyone else reports the next round, which we're already starting to get scheduled. But it's also an interesting case study because, like, to Leanne's point, it covers both casual and fine dining in their portfolio. So we get a pretty interesting look at consumers across the board from high income, to maybe lower mid income. And yes, it fell significantly short of expectations, but this was, I think, really, really driven by weather. And I know that that's a cop-out, but this was an anomalous season. All brands recognized that, especially in the beginning of Q1. And, Rick Cardenas did say that the changes in consumer sentiment haven't translated to material changes in their spending. And that's a reason, for optimism. There is one, of course, exception, and that's to households making $50,000 and less a year. Again, which is broad-based across the industry. But to Leanne's point, Olive Garden in particular, their buy one, take one deal hasn't been around since, in 5 years. We talked about this in our newsroom chat. That is a signal flashing to me. And, the never-ending pasta bowl, that's a signal. This is exactly what we were talking about, Sam, in terms of how these brands have to balance this really messed up consumer environment now when red signals are flashing by offering promotions that are not loss leaders. And that's what Olive Garden's doing. They reiterated their full-year guidance. That's why Wall Street ended the day yesterday favorably, because despite the weather patterns or whatever happened on this particular earnings call, there's optimism for the rest of the year because of these promotions that are not loss leaders. And there's a lot of analysts that have come out and said those January-February weather patterns may have also built up some pent-up demand for dining out. And so Darden sits favorably there.
Yeah, if nothing else, yeah. It's spring now, winter is over, and like that in itself is reason for optimism broadly, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because we've got two sort of countering things here going on, which is what Alicia and I talked before you joined, Leanne, which was on consumer sentiment because of sort of economic indicators saying, hey, warning, people are building up way too much debt and they're scared about the future and inflation is bad and they're going to stop spending. However, agreed that, hey, it's spring, baby. Let's get outside. Let's go sit on a patio, have a drink. So I don't know. I mean, both can be true at the same time, and it's going to be nuanced depending on the restaurant, depending on the day. But Darden, I mean, let's just also point out Darden, according to our America's Favorite Chains report with Technomic that came out in January, I mean, they are half of the top 10. Their brands are half of the top 10 favorite chains. And there is a reason for that, which is they create these great experiences across their concepts that people probably find value in. If you look at Olive Garden, I mean, they find value in the casual dining experience. They find, a reason to celebrate and have a great experience at their fine dining concepts. So I guess what I'm trying to say is just that, Darden, if you're not Texas Roadhouse or Chili's right now and you're a casual dining chain, you're probably struggling. But Darden is is not one that I would bet against, just because they have great brand affinity among their consumers. They've got a good value proposition. I'm throwing things all over the place. I'm getting so excited about this. They have a great value proposition at some of their brands. And I think most importantly, they're just great at executing, as they've shown. And that's what one of the reasons you see them show up on the favorite chains report. Leanne, what do we think? What should we expect from Darden now going forward? Because, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, they've got Cheddar's up and running now on you know, the third party delivery. They are innovating. And, you know, let's just put the economic indicators aside for a second. You know, do we have reason to believe that Darden in the rest of the year will be able to weather the storm that's going on?
Yeah, you know, they've been innovating at Olive Garden for a while now on a lot of different fronts, operations, technology, some menu stuff, marketing, and now they're, you know, applying that across the rest of their brands. They're kind of taking the Yum Brands approach of like, oh, hey, this is working at Taco Bell. Let's do it at KFC and Pizza Hut. Now, I hope it goes better for Darden than it's going for Yum over there. But I do think there's reason for optimism. You know, like I said, Olive Garden sales were up, like not a ton, but they were up. And that's not true, like you said, Sam, for really anyone except Chili's and Texas Roadhouse in this space. So I think they're on a good trajectory. People love them, as you said. So I think we can expect to see further innovation of some sort at Olive Garden. And I think we'll see the things they're doing at Olive Garden spread throughout the rest of their portfolio, Cheddar's, Chewy's, all of their casual dining brands. I think they're in a decent spot.
Very exciting to see. Okay, now as we wrap up, let's just do one quick lightning round question, which is, as we mentioned, it is spring. A little chillier here back in Ohio this week, and I think cold for the week to come, but we did reach 70 at one point in time. It's spring, sun out, 70 it's degrees. Joyous. What's your experience? What do you go for when the sun's out and it's 70 degrees? Leanne, what's your experience that you want to have?
Oh, that I want to have? I mean, I am dying to sit on a patio and drink a beer. But I was going to say my typical spring experience is that I do it the first day it hits 70, which it has not hit in New York yet. I think maybe next weekend we have a shot. I do it the first day it hits 70, and then I end up like freezing to death, because that's actually, especially after the sun goes down, if it was 70 degrees during the day, it's actually not warm enough to sit outside and drink a beer in the evening. But it's still an experience I look forward to every year. And even though I know that's how it's going to end, I look forward to fulfilling that destiny in the next week or two.
Good one. Alicia, what's the springtime experience you want to go for?
We are going to open our pool next weekend. And it was a pandemic purchase. But every time we open the pool, we sit out on the back deck, we drink a beer, and we watch the dogs swim around. And it's lovely. We're also going on spring break with the child next week. We're going to Clearwater, Florida. So I'm excited to get some beach time. And travel, no offense, for something other than work. It's been a travel-heavy Q1 for me, and I'm going to go sit on a beach and drink a beer, or many beers.
You've earned every single one of those. And I'm not going to reinvent the wheel here, sitting on the restaurant patio with a drink, but I'll add the other layer of without children. That's what I'm looking for. Give me a quiet patio with my wife, Katie, beside me, sure. But just, I don't want to have to pay attention to the kids. I love them.
Amen.
I just want a moment to not think about them. Anyway, Alicia feels my pain.
Also, one more baseball. That's it.
Baseball.
The whole, baseball. Just as a concept.
Yes, of course. March Madness is always
fun. We got to get through March Madness first.
Yeah. March Madness.
Mistakes in March Madness. But baseball, man, we're so close, I can taste it.
Okay. Pitchers and catchers. No, it's spring break. We're full on spring break, aren't we?
They're in spring training. We're like 2 weeks away from
spring training. You can see how closely I follow baseball in the last 1 year that I don't have a clue what I'm saying. Okay, guys. Leanne Zinsmeister, Managing Editor. Alicia Kelso, Executive Editor. Thank you guys, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
As the primary brand of Smithfield Culinary, we take pride in offering a huge array of high-quality pork products. There's really something for everyone, helping you satisfy every crowd, every time. Visit us at smithfieldculinary.com/smithfield.